Okay. Yeah. Okay, just one bear. Just one. Just one bear.
Hello and welcome to this episode. I'm Henrik from Nifrost, and with me today I have
Invisus of Blueham,
Onlan of Blueham,
Auk of Blueham,
Jan Ståle of Nifrost.
In this episode, we will talk about Blueham. So, Invisus, can't you just talk about when you started Blueham?
Yeah, it all started out. I had been drumming for a couple of years and living on an isolated island. There was not too many people to play with, so I eventually picked up the guitar and started playing simple riffs like, you know, the Enter Sandman riff and that kind of standard things. And one day I found my father's, he had a, I guess it was an 8 or 4 track cassette recorder with it was separate tracks and stuff. And that had like a guitar jack plug-in, so you can plug the guitar straight into it and start a recording. And before that, I don't think I had any thoughts of doing anything besides just playing some cool riffs on the guitar. But when I found that and started to experiment with it, then soon I found out that, yeah, why not just go along and see where this goes? So that was the, yeah, how it started.
The humble beginnings.
Yes.
Was it metal from the start, or did you...
Yeah, well, it was metal, kind of more heavy metal-ish, not at all, not very extreme at least, but it was just riffs and it was clean because I didn't have any distortion. It was a DA signal straight into the machine, to a cassette.
I think the only distortion pedals available at the entire island at the time were metal zones, so...
Yeah, but at that level, I don't think I'd ever used a distortion pedal. You know, I mainly played on a classical guitar, actually, at that point. And I guess I had plugged a guitar into an amp and used the distortion there, but I don't think I had pedals. And yeah, I was 13 years old at the time and a drummer, so yeah, I wasn't too familiar with how it was supposed to be done.
What year was this?
It was 2004, but I think it was either early or in the summer.
Okay.
Sometime around there at least. So that's how it started. And later on I found my dad's Mac that had like... the Garage Band, I guess, if you know what that is. It's like the MS Paint version of a recording program that is standard with the Macintosh, isn't it? Doesn't it come with the standard package?
It used to. Yeah. Does it still do that?
Yeah, it does. And it also comes on, it's free to download on iPads and phones as well.
Yeah, so that... when I discovered that, that had like you could use simple pre-programmed beats and drag them in and kind of make songs in a new way than just a single guitar without distortion on a cassette tape. So it was kind of another level, you could distort the signal right from the guitar, and yeah. So then it was a couple of demos. The early ones are. Are just rip-offs, me playing others' riffs and thinking it was my own. It kind of started from there. Later on I started to have acoustic drums and me and Onlan Some of the advantages from living on a small island is that the rehearsal room isn't that crowded. So I had a rehearsal room that I could use mostly as much as I wanted. So it was a lot of practicing and a lot of experimenting. And so later on, I started to record demos with acoustic drums, and I mic'd up the amps, and kind of got the more organic sound and production.
What year was this?
I guess I started doing this in like 2005, 2006, like something like that.
Okay.
And at the time, me and Onlan was we were jamming a lot and kind of mirroring ideas, and we played a lot of his stuff, and it was a very educational time for me, because Onlan is a couple of years older than me, and was ahead of me in musicianship and in a lot of things. So for me, it was very educational to go to the rehearsal room and jam, or just fuck around.
Yeah, I think the benefit of me being an actual guitarist might have had something to do with it.
Absolutely. So
there were some Motorhead covers and shit like that as well. And
We actually did a performance doing some Sabbath and Motorhead and Led Zeppelin. Yeah,
Zeppelin, Motorhead, shit like that.
Yeah. So
it was just you two at this point.
Yeah, and I think the way I remember it was like, I don't know what year, but at some point I kind of felt that, I don't know if I felt it or if we talked about it, but that Onlan was kind of in the band and was kind of, this was something we were going to do together, and he later had to go to the military or to the school, Kongsau stuff. So something like that. You were away for a couple of years, and then I used the time and kind of established it more as a one-man band at that time. So I don't know if you remember anything about that.
I can't really remember anything, but I think that's something you felt.
Okay.
I can't ever remember having that discussion.
But I know we talked about some live stuff, but I don't. There's been so much many projects, and what was a project and what was a jam and what was, you know, it was a,
yeah, and me living away as well.
So that happened, I know for these years, from like 2005 to 2006, 2007, I made like simple songs, not simple, but single tracks, and released them on these some websites, Norwegian websites, that you can upload your demos to and kind of get feedback and spread them. And Urørt, and there was actually one kind of spin-off site that was Uhørt, I remember
there was a shitload of metal stuff on Urørt, and all the pop stuff was ever played on the radio. Biased mainstream media, man. Fucking hell.
Yeah, so that was the first couple of years. And then in late 2007, I started recording the Logical Madness demo. And I actually upgraded a lot of my equipment. I had I ordered from the USA some drum mix and a new drum kit also. I had a complete setup for a double bass drum kit with like six toms or whatever. And so tried to pick it up a notch, but I don't know.
Is this available anywhere?
No. It was released online, and I don't remember, but like 20 to 25 CD, homemade CD copies in 2008. But this is not official yet, but I'm currently working on it to be re-released as a cassette.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not good enough to have a proper release, but I think some of the diehards and
it's a rare tracks kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm gonna release it on cassette because I don't want it to be on torrent sites and stuff. So
I don't want most people to be able to play it.
Yeah. Once that,
that sounds like a challenge to me.
Yeah,
I'll put it on a torrent site.
I know I'm jinxing it by saying it, but I'm gonna release it as a cassette and write inside the booklet or whatever that if you upload this, I'm gonna Ivar Medos will get you or something. Yeah.
You're gonna go to fucking heaven.
Yeah.
I was wondering about the thing.
Yeah,
are you a drummer or a guitarist? Like from the start?
From the start, definitely a drummer. So I guess I started drumming, I guess you could say the earliest around 2000 or something, but it wasn't really serious until a couple of years later, maybe 2001, too. I think I got a double pedal, drum pedal for Christmas around 2002 or 3. And then the next years, then I practiced like hell, many, many hours a week until about 2009. And since I've, I haven't practiced almost. So I'm kind of rusty. And
But your songwriting started when you picked up the guitar.
No, it was kind of kicked off by finding out that I could record some stuff, you know. By chance, by finding that cassette machine. Prior to that, I had just been playing Enter Sandman and Smoke on the Water and the stuff. Then I understood that I can fuck around with this and maybe it will be cool.
But yeah, Logical Madness, that was you released it online
in early 2008. Yeah, I started recording it in by Christmas time, 2007. So it's three original tracks and one Iced Earth cover, if that's allowed anymore. I don't know if I can re-release it with an Iced Earth cover, but
controversial.
Yeah. That time it was more. It was much more thrashy, more Metallica style. And
were the lyrics in English?
Yes, it was.
And at this time, you had moved from Feja?
Yeah, I had to move to go to school, but I pretty much every weekend were back home and practicing and drinking, having a good time. So that's why I had to wait till Christmas time to record it, because I couldn't do it. I did the recording at the community rehearsal room, so everybody was using it, and I couldn't have a proper recording set up and go do that every weekend, because somebody would be fucking with the settings. And the way I recorded the drums there is was the best way I knew back then. But I had, like I said, I had one mic for every tom and two overheads and two bass drums. But everything was cabled to the PA mixer. And so you had to kind of find the levels there. And I had a tape out to the computer, so you couldn't adjust the volume of the separate tracks after you had recorded. It was just one track out.
All the drums were on one track.
Yes.
Like a stereo.
Stereo mix.
Please discuss how horrible this is with someone 50 years older than you.
I discovered that I had recording files from those sessions still, as we were talking about the re-release stuff, and it's a very interesting way I did it. You know, it's like every guitar has its own track, and it's not put together and removed. When you're not playing, I haven't removed the sounds of the guitar. Yeah, so it's really primitive in it sounds fairly good for a 16-year-old finding his way, I think.
When did you start playing live? Was that a long time after, or was...
I guess I moved from Knarvik, which is like a half an hour drive from Bergen, to Bergen the year after, or the summer after I released Logical Madness. Then, I don't remember exactly this, but I think Hauk maybe does, but we started at least playing in a trash band together after a while, and that was kind of a cool thing. I the way I remember it was there was some cool songs and some cool stuff going on.
Some
there
really good riffs,
yeah,
the one song at least.
yeah and that was the problem, it wasn't more than one song and it didn't go anywhere, so eventually that died. And then I had a through these years after the Logical Madness, I had been making songs and making demos. Like, I don't know if I released them even, but making songs at least. And I think what started the whole live thing, it was something I have been thinking about for a time, but couldn't find a lineup or the focus to do it. But then we went to Vakken in... summer of 2009, I think. Because that was kind of the biggest challenge, was to find a drummer that could play the stuff. But then through mutual friends, I found this guy called Felix, and he said he was a drummer, and I was like, okay. We had some beers and I found out that, yeah, maybe. And so we went back to the car. I had some demos in the car, and I remember I showed him the Willman track. It's pretty fast, thrashy blast beat song. I remember sitting in the passenger seat and looking back at him. So you think you can play this? He goes, yeah, no problem. And I was like, okay. I didn't quite believe him, but...
That's pretty cocky.
Yeah, of course. 18 years old and been practicing like hell for 5-6 years. So at the time, I don't know, but... I didn't say it to him that I didn't believe him, but I hadn't played with good drummers at that time, I think. I never done it, so that was kind of the background, I think.
And you still haven't played with any good drummers.
I played with you, sir.
Exactly.
Yeah. But at least, we made arrangements to meet up when we got back and jam on these songs. And then I, of course, remembered Håkon from the trash band stuff, that he was a cool dude and a great bassist. So... he got involved then, I think. Wasn't it like that?
Yeah, somewhere around the summer of 2009, I think.
Yeah.
And when did Onneland come back in the picture?
It was quite some years after.
Okay, so you started playing live?
2014, I joined.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so at the time we had, I don't remember... Were you living in Bergen at the time online?
Yes.
Okay. I don't remember why or how or what, how that was, but at least there was a guy called Leif or Skrømt, I think his name, artist name was, that did the guitars the first years.
Okay.
And live guitars.
And then you also played live guitars?
Once on a small passage on one song.
It's not even, it wasn't even a whole song. Yeah, that's true.
So,
but then it was just one guitarist in the start.
Yeah.
For the most part.
And yeah, I remember he said that because after a while I talked about having one more guitarist, and so if there's going to be one more, I'm going to quit, because this, you know. And he had a point though, because at that time it was very simple, simple riffing stuff, because
there was one riff, there were layered guitars.
Yeah. So it would be thicker, but it would be messier also, you know, if we had.
Since there were no solos, there weren't really any point in having a backing guitar for that.
No, it's just like those, get those markings, kind of hang notes things.
Yeah.
But yeah, where were we? Getting to Brennal Brua-ish, I think.
Mm.
So yeah, around the time when Hauk joined, then I was doing demos for what eventually became Brennal Brua. And we did a couple of gigs before the recording of that EP. 2 gigs, I believe, at least.
I can't remember how many, but
yeah. And then eventually ended up recording the EP, or mini album, as I was very...
it wasn't an EP.
No, it was very important to me at the time. This is not an EP, this is a mini album. I don't know why. I don't remember why, but...
what's the difference?
Yeah. I don't really know, because... but I remember I was always pissed when I read...
He never had a reason for it.
So. No, I read the reviews and it was called an EP. But not the fucking... I don't know. I think it was because I want to release an album, but I didn't have the time to do it. Or I don't fucking know. Yeah, so that was recorded in the summer of 2010 in Conclave. How do you actually pronounce that in English? I always
would say conclave, but I don't know.
Yeah, but that kind of sounds Norwegian too. So I just go all the way Norwegian and say Conclave.
Isn't it also called End Earshot?
Yeah, but that I can pronounce.
Yeah.
so you don't have to say it.
Yeah. So I should just say An Earshot Studios.
Yeah.
In a Norwegian pronunciation.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Okay, so you did that with Bjørnar?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was kind of fast, very inexperienced, you know, as I talked about earlier. My experience with recording was just myself in a community rehearsal room, finding my way. So I had no experience with it. So going to the studio with what to me seemed like pro people, or yeah, they were pro people, I think, was very scary at the time, and also knowing that I had to do all the instruments and vocals, and yeah, scary stuff, but yeah, worked out.
Did you record everything there, or just the drums?
No, everything.
And then you stood in the room with the amplifier and played guitars?
No, you have... I don't know if you've been in the studio but it's a recording room in the middle, and you have a operator room on each side, two rooms. So the amps are in the recording room, and you have you are sitting in one of the
mixing
operator
rooms.
Yeah, operator rooms or whatever.
All your effects and mixers and stuff like that is in the control room.
Yeah. Control room. Yeah,
basically, only the cabinet is in the recording room.
Yes.
Did it take long, or was it like a week or?
No.
Well, when you fuck up as much as he does, then it takes a.
Well, you're not. That's not untrue, but it was a budget kind of recording. It was kind of, I guess Bjørnar actually kind of thought of it as a demo recording. I don't know. I think the whole budget was on 20,000 kroners.
Kroners. Yeah.
Kroners. It was pretty fast and get in, get out stuff.
How many songs?
Five, I think. Yeah.
Five.
Yeah.
Where can people listen to these songs?
These are available on Spotify.
Listen to them. Just to. Yeah. I haven't done it before, so I did it now today. So. Just to see how far it's away from what you're doing now.
Yeah.
And it is Blohem.
Yeah, but, it is, yeah.
But yeah, it's maybe, it's a bit different.
It's very primitive, but it's, what it has is it's fucking angry. It's really angry. But it's primitive and it's primal, maybe. But yeah, it's some of the songs have stuck with our fans. I have, it's my impression at least. So yeah,
Vilman at least has stuck fairly well.
That's it's a live favorite.
But aren't any others we usually play, are they?
No, but no? We get requests, but. Yeah,
mostly from your friends.
any set we don't play Vilmon is a ruined set from
yeah, but that's also kind of a song that's
I think I'd just, you know, just be standing there on stage after the lights would come on. No, we're not done yet.
Mm.
It's a staple of the of our live set.
I did actually guest on that song last time. Yeah, you played in Bergen.
Yeah, that was a cool.
That was cool.
Yeah,
that was so weird. Not playing half of the riffs. That was
because it was another. setting when Jan was than we usually do, because Xarim, who does the guitars, usually he did vocals and he usually does the guitar, you know, when the drums quit, isn't it like that? No, you usually do it on Lan, and now Jan did it. Yeah,
he has one of the five. Breaks we have in that song where everyone stops but the guitarist, and he does one of them. I do the rest, and suddenly I was not playing those.
That was you could have done them all. It would be okay.
I usually do, and that's, you know, it was
a same gig. We did a cover of Damage Inc. by Metallica actually, and I had another guest vocalist. That was cool.
That's true.
It's a fucking intense, hard hitting song. I enjoy that. Both doing it and listening to that song is it's very Blohem. It's very
doing it while listening to that song.
Yeah, so. Very.
We should definitely do that more.
Yeah.
Bring that at least once.
Yeah, but we need a vocalist that can do it, because me doing it all the way through is kind of monotone, I think.
But talking about covers, did you? I know you have a thing about recording covers. Did you start already in? You said you recorded an Iced Earth cover.
Yeah, that was on the demo.
Yeah.
Yes.
No covers on the EP. Or the mini album.
No. Fuck you.
Sorry.
No, at the time I hadn't I had the idea later on that I, when I was in the studio, I wanted to record an a cover song extra that didn't go into the album, so I could pile them up down the road and make a I think that's cool when you find out that like your favorite albums or whatever, that there was something left out from those sessions kind of 10 years down the road or whatever. So it's
how could they forget this one?
No, but it's more. It's like a it's like a TV shop commercial. It's like,
but wait, there's more.
Yeah. You've been listening to this for 10 years, but wait, there's more.
Was it Hit the Lights we recorded for?
Motor Breath.
Oh, yeah.
So. So I've done a cover for every full length album that's in storage.
Yeah. Didn't you do two for Holman?
Yeah, I did Den and Demon.
The one was on the album. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Den and Demon by Turbo Negro, if that's allowed to say.
I thought you said U2, and I was like, what the f-?
Yeah. But yeah, we're...
I feel like I'd remember that.
What?
If you did a U2 cover, I feel like I'd remember that.
I wouldn't tell you.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think... when did you actually release the Brenner Le Brewer mini
album? Yeah, thank you. It was released. I think it was recorded in like June and released in July or something. It was kind of quick.
Wow.
I ordered 200 CD copies from, I think it was something called the in Norsk, demofabrikken.no or something. It was kind of cheap, shitty printing. And had 200 hand numbered copies, so I sat down and wrote sloppy numbers on all of them and released.
All of them sold out.
Yeah, but it took some time. I have to be honest about that. But yeah, and then I see now that it's kind of there was a record shop on the east side of Norway that bought all the last copies I had, because they had been selling them on Discogs and getting some nice money for them there, because not everybody goes into the Blohemne web shop and finds them there. So at Discogs they sell at a okay price, I figured. So that's kind of cool too. The old stuff. The old folks.
What happened after this then?
Yeah, then...
Was it a lot of gigs after the Brenner Le Brewer?
Yeah, it kind of caught fire then. We uploaded that mini album to the Urørt... demo submission kind of thing, where you get
feedback
and it's also administered or whatever by the government
Norwegian Anarchy.
Is Eirik.
Norsk Rikskringkasting.
It's like BBC, or something.
Yeah, like BBC. Like they have like TV, radio, blah 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 blah.
It's like TV2 only without commercials.
With NRK and a BBC.
Anarchy in the UK, yeah.
Anarchy in the big black what firm?
I always imagine that when they're reporting live from London and stuff, that they should be saying anarchy in the UK.
But,
but yeah, so it caught some attention there on that. It was P3, was a radio channel. No, they played the title track Brennal Bruer on radio. I remember. Sometimes a couple of times, and we got a gig on Bylarm in 2011.
Oh, yeah, that's...
which was kind of I don't know, like
I guess you can call it like a showcase festival.
Yeah, absolutely. So all the promising bands from and artists from the whole. Country was invited to go to Oslo and do some live appearances to impress label folks and stuff. And I remember we we played the main stage on Rockefeller. it was I guess it was like maybe 100 people or something, 200, in a fairly large venue. When we started, but after the first half of the song, it was kind of 50 people Zero. Left. Or so
I remember that's the best stage sound we've ever had.
Best monitor sound.
Yeah,
yeah, it was cool to play there just to have a bucket list, but it was kind of depressing. It was also, I guess, in like the late afternoon, like 5 o'clock.
It was too early.
Yeah. But yeah.
That was the end of part one of the story about Bluehamn. If you want more, be sure to subscribe and follow us. Thanks for listening.
1 bear. Just 1 bear.